Welcome to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant. The Legacy and Faith Show is about the journey of discovering how to create plans that protect wealth and family values for generations. And now the host of the Legacy and Faith Show, Paul Grant.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, it's the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant. And hello there, Paul. Still wearing your Seahawks jersey, even though a recent game you were at, they lost?
Even though we lost on Sunday, yes. As a matter of fact, I think this show is aired for this coming week, right after we lost. So we're almost in real time with these recordings. So, yep, I even came in. My voice may sound just a tad hoarse because I was at the game and screamed for maybe about the first quarter, then sat down and
didn't do much else. How the Seahawks don't quite know how to close a game. They kind of wait till the last minute and hurry up and then blow it. And that's kind of where we're at in this questions about the settlement process and how to close an estate.
That's
what
right.
We're talking about. Last couple of shows you dealt with that, what to do, what not to do last week. This week, kind of getting into the area of, will I need to go to probate?
Yeah, a really big question for a lot of people out there is, well, what does probate mean? What does it look like? I've heard horror stories or I've actually heard the opposite. I've talked to other attorneys who say probate is no big deal. So now I've got the professional world or some examples of like it's like whatever. And then other people who say this is an absolute nightmare. Stay away from it forever and ever. Amen. Mm-hmm. And so it really produces a lot of insecurity for people. And we're just not sure exactly what to believe or what not to believe. And so let's fetter out a little bit about what is probate today?
Okay.
So probate is really the process. It's a court-driven system where if somebody passes away and they have anything titled in their name, then we have a concern because that person can no longer sign their name. I know that's a huge revelation. If you die, you can't sign your name. But this is a legal problem because if I were to die and I had an account in my name that doesn't have either a joint owner or a beneficiary designation, so those are kind of the two probate runarounds, then that account is now stuck and someone has to be able to legally sign my name. So what does that mean? That means that we're marching off to probate. Now, there's a couple of things that we can do that avoid probate. And I mentioned two of them there very quickly, which is number one, have something in your joint name. Now, there's good and bad with that decision. So people bring their kids onto the house title. They bring their kids onto bank accounts. And there are legal issues that can arise from that decision. I'm not going to get into it today. I apologize. It's a little bit of a cliffhanger. Mm. But there are other shows that deal with joint ownership and the concerns I have with them. So I would always prefer somebody to do good estate planning than to bring their children onto the house. It is a bad decision. So let me just leave it there. Do good estate planning, and it will resolve the concerns with joint ownership. Mm. But that is a runaround. So, for example, I am married. If my wife and I have a joint account and I die, she automatically is the owner of that joint account. She doesn't have to go to probate because she's also an owner. So it is a runaround. Also, a beneficiary designation. So that's number two. A beneficiary designation is a probate runaround. A beneficiary designation is when you list somebody, when you have an account with an institution, and there is a contractual right that institution must follow after you've passed away. So it is an operation of contract law that you have entered into with the institution, a bank account, an investment account, a 401k at work. All of these have a contract behind it. So we don't really think about that, but that's actually what's happening.
Can there be kind of a list of beneficiaries? Like if one person, if this number one beneficiary has passed, mm-hmm. number two beneficiary is next?
Yes, for sure. So as a married person, I may say, well, my wife is my first beneficiary, but then my children are the contingent beneficiaries. Okay. Or if I'm single, I may want to list both of my girls as 50-50 beneficiary designations. So then the girls would split that. So you can have multiple beneficiaries on the same level.
Okay.
Plus, as you are mentioning, it's called a contingent beneficiary. If the first one or the first couple are gone, then go to the next line and see who's available.
Okay.
And so, so we can do beneficiary designations, and it's an operation of contract law, an agreement with an institution of what they will do once you die.
What about being on the title? Often, married couple, they're both on the title to the house.
Yeah, and so that's a joint ownership. So that kind of goes back to the first one. That's joint ownership, whether it's a bank account, whether it's an investment account, whether it's the house. So by operation of law, the joint owner depends on how it's titled. There is a particular type of ownership where you can own with somebody that says, you don't win at the end of the day, I'm going to leave my portion to somebody else. As a matter of fact, oftentimes when I have clients walk in and they say, oh, I own this piece of property, it was inherited from my parents, and I own it with my siblings. Well, typically that is a different type of joint ownership that I can then say, I'm going to leave through my will or through my trust, who is going to receive my interest? And so all of a sudden, siblings can own it with their nieces and nephews.
Mm.
And so there's different types of joint ownership for the simplicity of running around probate, because we're talking about probate actually, joint ownership, regardless of how that joint ownership is actually going to matriculate when somebody dies, that is a probate runaround. Now, the other way to do it is to utilize a revocable living trust.
Mm-hmm.
And so, again, that is a contract. A trust is nothing more than a contract. And it says, we are going to create an estate plan that we want to close internally, privately, as a family. And when it's done properly, so there's a caveat. Everything has to be done properly.
So I dealt with a trust recently that wasn't done properly. Half of the assets were not in the trust.
That's correct.
So we've got half the stuff in the trust, half the stuff still has to go through probate and then put into the trust.
That's exactly right. And so those are the hoops. So trusts can avoid probate, but most do not,
really?
Because your circumstance that you just explained with a family member is the most common thing I see, which is that someone has a trust, they have their house in the trust, and maybe an investment asset, but typically that's it. And so,
well, why have a trust at all if you're going to do it that way?
Well, now you're going to kind of get into me getting on my soapbox here,
yeah.
And so I agree with you, but typically, I'm going to put my own profession on the line, which is really what I find is that a lot of attorneys have given a trust, but then give the client a list of, hey, put all these things into the trust. And the attorney hasn't taken the responsibility to assist the family to fully put all of their assets into the trust. And so this is going to be one of those statements where everybody knows it's true, but we still don't want to pay somebody to do it, which is you get what you pay for.
Mm.
And so if you're going to pay somebody a couple thousand dollars for a trust, then you're going to get a couple thousand dollar trust, which is you're going to get more of a template basic trust. And the objective then is I want to stay out of probate, or I have a taxable estate and I need to make sure that the taxes work. But yet the full process of going through every single asset has not been achieved at the front end. And so when you don't pay very much, you don't get very much. Mm-hmm. You get a document and a list of what you're supposed to do, but then we get busy as people.
Sure.
Well, life continues on. And it's just like, well, I've got my document, so that must be most of what I need. And unfortunately, it really is not, because we have a statement in estate planning that at the end of the day, title rules the day. In other words, how an asset is titled, whether it's you own it individually, whether you own it as community property, whether you own it as joint, whether you own it in your trust, that ends up determining how the estate plan is ultimately going to work. And unless it is in one of these capacities that will avoid probate, then we are going to be marching down to the probate road. So for simplicity, this is not always the case. So I'm using a high-level simplistic statement. This is not perfect. In order to get something that is close for you and to really understand what your circumstance is, we need to sit down and have a discussion. That's why I offer educational classes, opportunities to sit down and talk with us so we can go over your specific circumstance. But on a general term, anything that is titled in your name alone must go through a probate process in order to get it out of your name when you pass away and into the hands of whoever is going to legally be able to receive it. Now, who receives it? It depends on whether you have a will, a trust, or no plan at all. And so typically, you made a statement that you have a family member who has a trust, but yet they have some things in your in their own name.
Most of the valuable things are not in the trust.
Right. And so therefore, you go through a probate process, which says, go put it into the trust, which then says, give it out to the heirs. Okay. So therefore, we're jumping hoops to get it to the right hands. In a will scenario, we pass away with something that's only in our name, then a judge is going to look at the will. So number one, why do we need a judge at all? Well, if you have under $100,000, we have a small affidavit process in Washington to where the rightful heir can fill out a form and say, I am, according to either by law or by the will, I am allowed to make this claim. Now, I have a concern with that because anybody can make a claim. And unfortunately, it may not be the actual person who is supposed to be making the claim. We see this with cars all the time. Well, my brother came in and just took the car. He went down and he got it retitled. Okay, it's the same thing with a small claims affidavit. So these systems of relying upon a court system or other people doing what's right sometimes is suspect. So we need to make sure that we have a good estate plan so we know which journey our family's going to take. Mm. But if you have under $100,000 of assets that were supposed to go through the probate system, there is a process by which somebody can make a small claims affidavit and ultimately claim that property without opening up a full probate. Now, what that doesn't do is it doesn't get rid of creditors. And so creditors are still on the board of people who can make claims, and there's potential liabilities there. But these are the options of not going through probate, which is use a trust, which is typically the way that I standard, that's my kind of lean, is I would prefer that almost anybody and everybody use a trust to avoid probate. But you can use joint ownership, you can use a beneficiary designation, you can use a community property affidavit if you are married, and if you have under $100,000 of all assets combined in your estate, then your heirs can use a small claims affidavit. So those are some of the things that can avoid the probate process. When we return from break, we'll talk more about what does it mean to actually march down the probate process? What does it cost? What does it look like?
How long does it take?
That's right. How long does it take? When can I get my money? Because that's what everyone wants to know. So when they say, how long is this going to take? The real question they're asking is, when can I get my money? So when we return from break, we'll take a look at those questions.
Okay, listening to the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant, estate and tax planning attorney, and he would like to help you with your plan or maybe lack thereof. And if people need help, Paul, how do they get in touch with you?
Head over to our website. It's legacyandfaith.com. And we have, like I mentioned earlier, opportunities for educational classes coming up. There's a opportunity to communicate with us. Past podcasts are even there as well. So head over to legacyandfaith.com.
Back with more of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant in just a moment.
Hi, this is Paul Grant with the Legacy and Faith Show. Hosea 4:6 says, my people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge. God's people need to be fully prepared in managing their finances and ensuring that their wealth is properly transferred. It is our passion to bring this knowledge to the body of Christ. If your church would benefit from having a financial and estate session that is biblically based, then I encourage you to reach out to us so that we can help design and implement a specific and strategic session for your church. Or
If you are interested in estate planning services, then I likewise encourage you to reach out to us. You can go to legacyandfaith.com and receive all the information you need. Again, go to legacyandfaith.com.
Your photos, slides, scrapbooks, and home movies are invaluable and irreplaceable. Barry Kenny here with the Bear Services. Call us to save them as digital files to be stored electronically and shared liberally. We will even come to you so they stay in your possession. Go to thebearservices.com for more information. That's thebearservices.com.
We now return to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant, and continue today's practical discussion to apply biblical principles for kingdom purposes.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, Legacy and Faith Show this week, getting back to basics, the settlement process this week and the probate aspect of closing an estate. And we've already determined that maybe people are in probate. So more questions about probate, like how long does it take, how much it cost, et cetera, et cetera.
And we talked at the front half some things that you can do to avoid probate. So let's talk about what happens if I have the necessity to get into probate. There's reasons why you need to go to probate. Number one, there's sufficient assets in the estate that the law determines you need to open up one. There may be a creditor that is a very high price creditor. If somebody had a health incident that, and all of a sudden they've racked up $50,000, $100,000 or more dollars towards that illness at the end of your life, and now you've passed away, and now your estate is staring down the barrel of thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars worth of debt, then a probate is probably what is needed in order to clear those debts out so that your family can rest assured they don't have to take it on. As a matter of fact, that's actually one of the bigger questions. I did several seminars last week, and somebody came to the seminar to ask that question only. She said, I have one question and one question only. My sister just died, and all I want to know is, am I responsible for the debts?
Mm-hmm.
Because my sister had a lot of debts. And so the answer is, if you close the estate properly, then the answer is no. There are potential trips there that if you've started to take responsibility and pay them, that there's an argument that says, yes, they could become yours. But for the most part, the debts of somebody who has passed away are the debts of the estate. They are not the debts of the beneficiaries.
Yeah.
Now, there's an exception, which is that, let's say, I use beneficiary designation. So let's make my story really simple. I only have one bank account. That's the only asset I have. I don't have a house. I don't have investment accounts, nothing. And so on my bank account, I put beneficiary designations of my two girls, okay, because I have two daughters. So now they receive, by operation of law, because remember, that's a contract with the bank. And the bank says, come in and we'll give you the money. But I had an illness at the end of my life and I have a lot of hospital bills. Well, now what happens? The money went to the beneficiaries, but the money was mine before I died. And my finances are liable for my debts. So now my girls, even though they've received it by operation of law, they are now required to pay off the debt because they've received the estate before the estate was fully settled. So in other words, you can't avoid estate debt by simply using a beneficiary designated asset. So therefore, in that particular circumstance, my daughters will be required to then pay the estate up to the amount that they received from me.
Okay.
Because my estate,
but not from their personal
is liable.
Finances.
Not personal.
Yeah.
Not personal. And so you are not personally liable as a beneficiary unless you received money from the estate, because the estate is responsible.
Hmm.
So you kind of have to look at it. Paul's responsible for his own debts, and I can't just simply use a beneficiary
designation. So I got $100,000 from the estate, and now it's in my hands, but it turns out, whoa, they owed $90,000 debt.
Yep.
You'd have to use that $100,000 you got, and you'd only get $10,000.
That's correct. Okay. Because if we had kept it within the estate as a whole, That's what would that would have been the bottom line anyways.
Right.
Right? Is that the estate would have had to pay it. So you don't get to avoid your debts by simply using a beneficiary designated asset. And so so therefore there can be a time when beneficiaries are responsible. That's one of the few times when they actually are, is when they've received beneficiary designated assets. So we're marching down probate now. We've determined that a probate is necessary. And so now what happens is we need to get the will, if there is one, and present it to the court, because the court wants to authenticate that the signatures are accurate, that there are witnesses, that there's a witness attestation. I'm not speaking that word very well. But in other words, the witness has affirmed that, yes, we were here and we signed it. So there's a specific type of form that we can use to say the witnesses have affirmed before the court as an affidavit that they were witnesses. And so the court wants to see these things. The court is actually going to hold and keep the original will. So the original will must be given to the court. In return, the court is looking for a couple things. Who did I? So I'm going to use myself as an example. I die and I have a will. Who did I name as my personal representative, okay, or my executor? In other words, who is stuck with the job of closing my estate? The court is going to look at that person, make sure it aligns, make sure that they are qualified. If you have a felony in your past, then by law, you are not supposed to be closing an estate. And okay. So we need to make sure that they still qualify. We need to make sure that I didn't name somebody, but yet if I'm married at the time, so I can name someone other than my spouse. If I am in a second marriage, maybe I name my daughter to close my estate instead of my second wife. Mm-hmm. There's multiple reasons.
Or your attorney.
Or my attorney. Mm-hmm. But if I've been married, my wife may have community property rights, and so she has legal rights and preference over the community property estate. So therefore, there's, even though I've named somebody, that person may or may not be the exact person who qualifies under the law. So the judge needs to make sure that who I've named is the person who qualifies. If they do, then they receive what's called letter testamentary. So that is when I have a will, I have the testamentary object, the will, and I've named somebody, and indeed the judge has confirmed that everything aligns properly within the will. So now we get court orders, a court document that says this person is in charge. So let's say I name my oldest daughter Rebecca because I can follow everything correctly. Now, Rebecca gets a letter from the court saying you are empowered to act as Paul. Because remember, one of the reasons I got here was because I have an asset that's in my name and someone has to legally sign my name for me. I can't do it. So now my will has says, I trust Rebecca, let Rebecca do it. So now the court says, we affirm that the will is valid. Rebecca is the proper person to, she qualifies as the personal representative. So therefore, she is now legally empowered to deal with Paul's assets, not just my assets, but also my debts. So she has the legal capacity now to deal with those medical bills that we were using as an example, deal with the mortgage company, deal with selling a house, deal with actually collecting funds, life insurance proceeds, return of premiums. What if I had a health care policy and I had paid multiple premiums? Well, they're going to want to return money to me because I prepaid the premiums. That comes back in my name. Well, if I don't have somebody who can sign my name, then we're stuck with that check. So now my daughter, when we've gone through the probate system, legally can sign my name, can legally deal with all of these different things, collect all the funds, and then follow the will and ultimately make a distribution to she and her sister on an equal basis, mm-hmm. if indeed that's what my will says. Mm-hmm. So now, if I don't have a will, the probate process is very similar. Someone has to come to the court to say, I want to be the person to close the estate. Now, instead of letters testamentary, it's called letters administration, because the court is administrating the process. The statute administrates the process, not the testamentary object. So the name changes slightly. But the result is the same. If the person who comes to the court qualifies and can meet the standard that, yes, you have a standing to close the estate, they get the same power and the same authority. After we get that, we have to notify all of the individuals who are beneficiaries or who are heirs. They have a 30-day process that they can challenge that says, no, I want to be it.
Right.
And so, and at this point, we are typically anywhere from about $1,000 to $2,000 into the game just to get the ball rolling. So, that's about as much time as we have today to really start the probate process. But I hope that helped in understanding some of the step-by-step and what we're trying to get through the process when we talk about probate.
Probate, all part of the settlement process this week on the Legacy and Faith Show. So many questions. Obviously, it gets very complicated. If you're going through this process right now, you maybe have never even put together a will. Paul has told us on a number of shows, a lot of people don't even have a will.
50%.
So start somewhere.
That's right.
A great place to start is by visiting your website, Paul.
The Legacy and Faith Show. So go to legacyandfaith.com. There's past podcasts. There's ways to communicate with us, educational things coming up. So go to legacyandfaith.com.
Always great stuff. Legacy and Faith Show with estate and tax planning attorney Paul Grant here on KCIS.
Thank you for joining us for the Legacy and Faith Show. You can find more information about the show and Paul Grant at legacyandfaith.com. Join us next week at the same time as we learn to build God's kingdom and continue our journey on how to protect wealth and family values for generations. All discussions on the Legacy and Faith Show are intended to be about general legal issues. If a situation applies to you, then we encourage you to seek specific legal advice. Please do not rely upon any discussions from this program in place of having a personal relationship with your attorney. Any listener question that may have been answered also does not constitute legal advice and does not establish a client-attorney relationship.